This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I'm having a little trouble with my iPad right now. I was trying to click on a story here about, I think it's about Lawrence O'Donnell at MSNBC. He's one of the crazies over there. And the headline is MSNBC host reveals he's taking a week off, citing exhaustion, Sue, from the Trump presidency.
Oh, come on.
I hope he's okay. My goodness. Yeah, I'm actually surprised they're all not taking time off because they have to be exhausted by the pace of all this right now. We're going to talk about the avian flu, the bird flu, and actually our guest at the bottom of the hour, Scott Polk, is someone who is a dairy and beef cattle vet. I didn't know this, but that's also something where the flu can be transmitted. Humans can get it. It's very rare, but we'll talk about that. We have an audio cut of the day. Dan Reardon with the latest on the Players' Championship. That's coming up later. We have our fish fry tomorrow. Come see us in Cottleville. Kilmeade's a week away. You can go to briankilmeade.com to get the VIP tickets. Anything else?
Oh, that's
trying
it.
To get it all in there. I got a parent-teacher conference to go to after the show to determine whether my daughter will have to stay in fourth grade or whether she'll get to fifth grade next year. I'm not completely sure about that, so it's still going to be a big night. We have John Hart with us this afternoon. He is the CEO of Open the Books. You know what, Sue? I have to play this because it seems to fit.
And now, this Doge update.
Yeah.
I mean, whoa.
On the Mark Reardon Show.
John is the CEO of Open the Books, and my producer, John, said you seemed to be Doge before Doge was even a thing, right?
Well, that's a great compliment. I love the setup there. That's a great clip. At Open the Books, we're a transparency organization. And just the quick history is I worked for Senator Coburn for years.
Oh, awesome. Yes.
And I helped write and pass a bill called the Federal Funding Accountability and Transparency Act that put all federal spending online for the first time in history. So that piece of legislation created a whole ecosystem of groups that empowered crowdsourced oversight. And Open the Books is one of the flagship organizations in the transparency space. And a lot of other individual entrepreneurs online have created accounts and ways to search government spending. And so what we've done really over the past 20 years since almost that bill was written is we've painted all these targets. So we've illuminated all of the examples of waste. And now Doge is coming in and going in and doing mostly precision strikes on a lot of those. So it's a very gratifying and exciting time to see them going to work on this. And it's going to be a very complicated, challenging process, but they're doing a tremendous job. And we're going to be continuing to identify examples of waste. And when they're done, the nature of history, as Thomas Jefferson said, is that government tends to grow while liberty diminishes, and there's a battle between the size of government and the scope of individual liberty. So we're going to be doing this long after Doge does what they do.
That's awesome. And Senator Coburn used to, as I remember, I know he passed away several years ago, but he used to illustrate this wasteful spending every year. I can't remember. I know Citizens Against Government Waste does like a pork list. Was it associated with that? Because he highlighted it every year. I remember that.
Yeah, we did something called the Waste Book in Coburn's office.
Right.
And he was the senator that went after the famous earmark called the Bridge to Nowhere.
Oh yeah,
and that was a bridge back in 2005. And that's a great story about the power of citizen activism, because we lost that vote in the Senate 82-15. So 67, we fell 67 votes short, but we won the vote by 82-15 among public opinion. And the American people were overwhelmingly disgusted by the Senate defending the special interest project. That it was a bridge to an island of 50 people in Alaska, cost over $200 million. And the amendment would have shifted that money to repair a bridge that was just damaged by Hurricane Katrina. So the Senate voted to protect this corrupt earmark system. And that's what led to an earmark ban 5 years later. And that saved taxpayers over $140 billion. And it helped Congress sober up. And Congress actually cut spending in real terms on a year-to-year basis for the first time between 2012 and 2013, for the first time since the end of the Korean War. Mm-hmm. So, this shining light on waste through transparency makes a big difference. And we're seeing that unfold in a grander scale through DOGE.
John Hart is here. He runs Open the Book. So if I were to go to the website, for example, I know that you have like 50 agencies that are, highlighted here from the DOJ, Homeland Security. You can go in there and kind of cross-reference what kind of things they're spending money on.
Yeah, exactly. You can go and you can do a search. You can do keyword searches, search by salary. And then we do a lot of oversight reports. So we have one that's going that's really interesting right now is if you go to something called the Federal Register, that lists all the agencies and sub-agencies of the government. And there are 441 of them. And what we're finding in this review of agencies, the first thing we discovered is that 75 are zombie agencies. In other words, they're still listed, and we pay this entity within the federal government to track all these agencies, but half of them, well, not half, but a good percentage are not even active.
And that makes you feel good, doesn't it?
The ones that are getting money, yeah,
oh
that makes you feel great. Yeah, who's watching? And it's an inventory issue. That's what's so alarming is that any business that ran that way, they would go out of business because they wouldn't be able to track what they were spending money on. So it's really alarming. But then within the agencies that are getting money, there's been massive spikes in spending and relatively flatlined, employee numbers. Some of that's been outsourced to other NGOs and contractors. But we have a massive spending problem in this country. And, when we're spending more on interest payments on the national debt than we are on defense, that's a threat to our national security and our kids' futures.
Well, and as you know, John, the way that Washington does the math, and I highlighted this a little earlier this week, there was a Washington Post story on Monday, I think it was, about how Washington, D.C. might have these terrible cuts, John, because of what DOGE is doing and what the Republicans are doing. And they were being asked, this is horrible, and I hope people are not driving and they don't want to drive. They were actually being asked to make the unbelievable sacrifice of just simply going back to 2024 spending levels. But that was too difficult to do because that was deemed in the Washington Post and in D.C. swamp speak, that was a $1 billion cut. No other operation, human being, company operates this way. If you do, you go bankrupt, which is exactly what's happening to the country. But it's outrageous the amount of spending that goes on.
Yeah, and we've known this is a problem for years. Back in the 1980s, President Reagan did the Grace Commission, and they found that one out of every three tax dollars was wasted. And it's important to think of this in the scope of history. This is a 100-year project by the progressive left to grow the administrative state. And with the exception of those 2 years I mentioned earlier, where we actually did cut spending, it's been a massive growth in the size and scope and power of government.
And you would agree that this is a bipartisan problem, right? This is not just Democrats
absolutely.
Doing this. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So one of the things you highlighted here, I think this is interesting. You kind of referred to it, John, but the spending at some of the agencies that we're maybe even talking about here, like USAID, where the staffing grew by a certain percentage, which I think you indicated wasn't completely unreasonable, but the spending was way off the charts higher.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, for example, Department of Education, I think the spending was up 750%. FEMA, there was a big growth in staff, 290%, but 2,000% increase in spending. And so that's unsustainable. And we can't continue to go on without examining and really thinking clearly about what are we spending this money on and what's the value for taxpayers.
What's the return? That is an important question, the ROI.
Right. And you know, this is a dirty job. You know, I'm a big fan of micro. And if you really want to cut spending effectively, you have to be willing to get on your hands and knees and pull the weeds. You know, you can't just mow the flower bed and say you've done the job. You've got to really understand where the waste is and go and get it out. And, you know, Doge and the team of technologists, they have are certainly equipped to do that.
So I want you to talk about NASA here, because one of the things you do at Open the Books is you mentioned investigations. One of the investigations that you just revealed was from NASA, and this relates to some of the DEI nonsense that's going on, right?
Yeah, this is a really crazy one. So you know, there's an issue right now with these astronauts stranded.
Yeah,
you people probably heard about, and this, sadly the launch just got delayed again.
But, right, I heard that.
But they're going to be brought home hopefully. So you know, NASA has a budget of about $25 billion, but you know, we spent I think it was $20 million on DEI related activities at NASA, and when you think about it, you know. What is DEI and promoting anti-racism or gender-affirming agendas do to help NASA's mission? And
I have an answer. You know, I have an answer
crazy.
For that. Nothing. Right. That would be my answer.
So, yeah, you know, the way I put it is, you know, Newtonian physics and atmospheric reentry, they do not care about anti-racism talks or gender affirmation. So NASA has a chance to take one small step toward fiscal responsibility and one giant leap toward common sense by getting DEI out of their programs.
Well, and let's hope so, because, you know, I've been trying to highlight this with some guests over the course of several years. And that's why I think that there's so much confidence right now, because some of this has finally sunk in and they're going after it. And,
yes.
You know, one of the things I say about DEI is, and I can tell that there's news anchors like Aaron Burnett on CNN that have no idea what they're talking about. So don't trust me. Maybe don't trust you, John Hart. Go to the New York Times from the fall, and the explosive investigative piece that they did on the University of Michigan exposing all that crap, where you even have people on that campus saying, yeah, it was a big waste of time and money.
Yeah. And it's very divisive, because, look, our country is founded on this idea, this revolutionary concept that our rights do not come from our gender, our ethnicity, our religion, our race. They come from natural law or nature's God. And that if you want to uphold individual dignity, we need to recover and reapply that founding tradition of human dignity and human worth. So all of these additions that we make to people's names, you know, LGBT+, whatever the latest acronym is, those are all subtractions to a person's value. That you have value just because you're you. You're a human being, I believe, created in the image of God, and that gives you value. It doesn't come from your affiliation to any ethnic group or identity. And so identity politics is by definition anti-American, and it's exacerbating whatever racial tensions are in the country.
There is zero doubt about that. Let me ask you one more question. You're John Hart, who is the CEO of Open the Books. One of the criticisms that is leveled mainly by the folks at CNN and the legacy media, but it is a talking point, and I'm sure you've heard it, is you're not really going after, and when I say you, they're talking about Congress or Doge or whatever, but maybe the same criticism would be leveled against Open the Books. You're not really going after waste or fraud or abuse or anything like that. You're just going after spending that you don't like. That's what they keep saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say our answer to that is, let's open the books together and find out.
Right.
Give people maximum insight into what government's doing, and then let people get more, ask for more or less of it. And so transparency, and the founders wrote transparency into the Constitution because they knew it was a building block of a free society. It actually precedes the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment. And you know, in the public square, transparency is like oxygen. You can't speak if you can't breathe. So you have to have oxygen and information in a public debate. So I would say, well, look, if you think, you know, people want more of this, let's have more transparency and decide if the public wants more of it or not.
Absolutely. Hey, one thing.
So we're not cherry picking anything. Our mission is to get the information out there. And Coburn worked with a senator named Barack Obama to make this bill law. So if you don't like transparency, you can blame Barack Obama.
I like that.
And Tom Coburn.
Hey, let me ask one more question. I lied, because I'm on the website right now. It's openthebooks.com. I see the NASA story up there. It looks like a lot of great information and resource for people if they want to check this out. And then toward the middle of the page, it says featured checkbooks, and it looks like you go into different states like Kansas, Louisiana. It doesn't look like Missouri, though, is covered on that, so you don't have all the states on there, right?
Well, yeah, that should be, that could just be a bug on the slide, but yeah, we have information in incomplete form over most states, so that's also
no, I missed it. It is here.
We've got not just federal but state and local data, and that's an incredibly powerful tool, and that allows us when there are things like the fires in Los Angeles, we're the organization that is able to put two and two together and identify what we're paying the fire chief in LA. And we're able to detect all kinds of you know, different patterns of spending across states. For example, the Qatar Foundation has infiltrated K-12 schools with an agenda that's, you know, trying to teach and indoctrinate students and teachers into this idea that terrorism is morally relative, that it really just depends on your perspective. Yes, yeah,
that's a new one. I haven't heard that one yet.
That's the power of having data, is that it allows people to look at what government is doing and then to decide in a free society if they want more or less of it.
Yeah, I think they're kind of deciding right now, but, you know,
it depends. I think so too.
Yeah, it depends on, you know, look, Quinnipiac has this poll. I don't know if you saw the poll from Quinnipiac today, but it's really stunning. I highlighted this earlier because I guess they were kind of trying to make the case that, you know, some of the support for Doge is really not there. But if you looked at the percentage of Republicans, 77% support. Now, this is weird because this is an incredible number. 96% of the Democrats were against it. 96%. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't even know how that happens.
Yeah, I think that just speaks to, you know, the extent to which our media is polarized,
and
people can choose their own kind of narrative. But here's what's really going to matter is that, you know, the reason President Trump was elected again is because people believed and they felt like they were better off under his administration than Joe Biden's. And I think, in spite of the bumps that we're seeing right now in the economy, that if you can get the waste out of the government and you can reallocate those resources and let people keep more of their money, that's going to have an incredibly profound and powerful economic benefit. And if you make it difficult for agencies to throw up roadblocks like the EPA for new energy production, energy is the master resource that makes everything cheaper or more expensive. And so the energy policy is really unassailable. And it's going to do a lot of good. And sometimes those benefits can take months or longer to spread throughout the economy. But cutting spending is the best form of stimulus you can imagine.
John, you're a fantastic guest. I really appreciate it. Openthebooks.com. I'm going to check out the website more because I love this stuff. I'm going to dig. I'll tell you, the checkbook you really want to check out is Illinois. Boy, I bet that one's revealing.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a lot more to share about that one, I can tell you.
Hey, keep us posted. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks. Take care.
I want to go back to this poll, the Quinnipiac poll, because I find this stunning. It really is. 60% of voters disapprove of the way that Elon Musk and Doge are dealing with workers employed by the federal government. 36% approve. But then they point out that there's a wide partisan divide, and that's when you get to the numbers between Republicans and Democrats. 77% of Republicans approve. 96% of Democrats disapprove.
I think
so. There's not just a couple of people out there who are Democrats that think that this is a good idea. That is unbelievable.
I think part of it is because they're personally mad at Elon. Like, somehow they've personalized it to him and have focused all of it on him. Now, if his name were out of it, you were to word that
I think you're probably right.
If you're going through and getting rid of waste, I think then that would have a different answer.
No, I think you're right. And this is where polling gets a little tricky, because the way that you're asking the question certainly would have an influence here. But it's also what John Hart just referred to, and we talk about this all the time. It's the way that, and you just sort of pointed this out too, Sue, it's the way that the media is presenting all these things. Look, if you're watching NPR, if you're watching CNN, if you're watching anything but Fox, you are getting a picture of this that is totally one-sided. Now, you can make the case, some people might make the case on the other side, that Fox is that way, and maybe they're a little bit more pro-Doge, okay? We're going to stipulate that. But how is it possible that the rest, like every other part of the legacy media, can't see some value, which most of the American people, when you do just pose the question to them on whether this is waste or something that we should be spending money on, it's like 80% of the people agree on that stuff. But this is very manipulated through the legacy yes. media's eyes. And if everyone is Elon's bad, Elon's a Nazi, you know, people are going after the cars. And then, you know, even today, this is, I haven't gotten into this. Maybe I'll do it for audio cut of the day. We're going to talk a little about the avian flu. But these Palestinian protesters in New York City at Trump Tower just basically taking it over. Think about what they stand for. They don't stand for free speech under our Constitution. They stand for a terrorist who hates this country, who has declared that he wants to end Western civilization. That doesn't seem to be a big gray area for me on someone who's not a U.S. citizen, who's just on a green card. I don't care if his wife's pregnant or not. Get him the hell out of here. We're going to talk about the bird flu coming up.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on. 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Well, I got another Fish Fry Friday tomorrow. This one in Cottleville at the Knights of Columbus Hall, which is going to be a lot of fun. We hope to see you out there. We'll have the gang. Sorry. A little coughing spasm here. We'll have the whole gang out there for the roundtable. Jane will be here. Also, former State Senator Jeff Smith and current State Senator Nick Schroer on the panel. Let's talk a little bit about the bird flu here with Dr. Scott Polk. He is an associate professor of veterinary medicine at the University of Missouri Extension. Now, he's not someone who specializes in birds necessarily. He's a dairy and beef cattle vet, but he knows a lot about the bird flu. Dr. Polk, how are you this afternoon?
It's a beautiful day. Sun is shining.
It is a beautiful day. Oh, my goodness. We got out and enjoyed it earlier today. I guess we got some heavy winds coming in, though, this weekend. But let's talk about the avian flu here. And I don't even know exactly where to start, but maybe just a definition of what it is, how it's transmitted. Can humans get the bird flu? Maybe some basics to get us started.
So it's an influenza virus. It has been around for a while. It's pretty much has been confined to poultry or to the bird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I've come in contact or have been more involved with it or watching it is when it hit the dairy farms last March. Probably began in February, but the first diagnosed case was in March of 2024. And with me being in the dairy beef world, have had to follow it closer. It can transfer to humans. There are some humans that have had cases. Within the dairy world, most of the humans have picked it up from that where there was a known source from the cow.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those are fairly mild cases of a conjunctivitis and eye infection. There's one, a respiratory. You know, where the USD is tracking 4,000 some employees on dairies that are on dairy farms where bird flu has been diagnosed, you know, there's just been a handful of people that have been infected or have shown symptoms from it. So, yes, can humans get it? It's probably a little pretty low prevalence of transfer to humans.
But if the chickens or if animals or any bird gets it, then what happens to the bird that makes it? Because these are birds, if they have the flu, that have to be exterminated. Is that how it works?
Well, so the bird flu affects the poultry, the birds, much more so than it does cattle or others. It depends on the species.
Okay.
There's been 30 different species of mammals that have been infected by it. Some are infected more than others. You know, the cat, you know, every dairy farm's got cats, and if you feed it a cat infected milk, and for some reason the virus really loves milk, and, you know, the cats can die from it. But the cow itself, if she's not lactating, she doesn't show hardly any signs.
Mm.
And if she is lactating, she may get sick, but a majority will get through it. As opposed on these poultry flocks, if it gets in a bird barn, it might kill a majority of them.
Okay.
And so because the flocks, it can be so devastating on the flocks that sometimes they have to go in and take care of a whole flock that gets infected because they don't want it going to the next barn. And the next
barn. That makes sense. So how would you assess Missouri when it comes to the bird flu at this point compared to other states?
So I will speak more towards the cattle part of it. So far, and with testing and routine surveillance testing going on now, We have not had a positive case. Other states, Texas, California, several other states have had more cases of the bird flu. I would be lying if I would say we've had no cases within the poultry flock. I'm not 100% sure of that, mm-hmm. but we have had no cases in cattle.
So that's positive. That's definitely a positive. Now there is a vaccine, right? But it has to be. It's a shot, and every animal has to get the shot. Every chicken.
No. So the vaccine. So what I know about the vaccines is they're trying to make it so it would be something that they could put in like the water
or food, right?
Yeah. That way versus, you know, having to give the shot. So that's within the poultry world. There is some talk, and of course there's proprietary things going on, some talk that they're maybe doing something for cattle. But yeah, you know, it becomes really tough to go into a flock and catch every bird and vaccinate them, whereas if they could deliver that through the water feed, that would be preferable.
Yeah.
Easier on the animal, easier on the people, and such.
But obviously, this has been around for a while. There's more challenges, I guess, you know, right now because of the extent of it. So what's the level of optimism that something like that will come about in the near term?
The vaccination?
Yeah. A new delivery for the vaccination, if you will.
Yeah. I would guess that... that we're pretty good about figuring out how to get this done. I mean, it's not the first of the disease that come in such a situation, and I'm pretty confident that they'll figure out how to get that done for the poultry.
Good. I love it. Dr. Scott Polk, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, fantastic.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the update here this afternoon, the information, very helpful. So you have a great weekend and enjoy the weather. Thank you, Dr. Polk.
Thank you.
All right, yeah, take care. Bye. We got a players update with Dan Reardon, our golf expert, no relation, plus an audio cut of the day coming up next. So you've never been to my humble abode, but I have a room that's in the basement. It's a little weird because you have to walk through the unfinished part of my basement to get to my studio. I call it my music room, my record room. I did the show that I, you know, before I switched over here to 97.1 FM Talk, I did my KMOX show for almost an entire year out of that room because it was COVID. You know,
we got booted
out of the building in March of 2020, and it was, I think, March of 2021 when I started here. So I use that room. I probably underuse it, you know, compared to the way I used to use it. I was always in there. But I have a TV in there, and I can, you know, listen to the audio. I can also listen to all my music in there. But so this morning I'm in there, and I want to monitor Fox because there's all this protest going on. I can't get that damn audio to work. And then I remembered that somebody in my household, my wife or my child, I'm guessing it was my wife, allowed the bunny, Oreo Smario the Bunny on Instagram to be in the unfinished area last week because I thought he was upstairs, all right? This was about a week ago.
And I come downstairs
and I hit golf balls in this area too because I have a little net and, you know. Uh-huh. So I'm going back to the hit golf balls and there he is. He's just plopping around there. Well,
you think he chewed something?
I know he did because I looked behind. I had to call the sound room today because he loves the little, like, iPhone chargers are his favorite. Well, we've come to realize that, so we put that all, none of those are on the ground anymore. He doesn't really like if you plug something into the wall that's a thicker cord, he didn't do that. But man, his teeth just slice through these little things,
like where you have
a RFD device that's on an Apple TV or something like that. So yeah, a little bunny damage. I got to call the sound room for a, it's my wife's fault. Remember what I said.
No,
it's not my fault. It's never my fault.
Because that's
Sue.
Important.
Exactly.
Yes.
All right. Audio cut of the day coming up here in just a minute. But let's check in with Dan Reardon, no relation, to talk about the Players' Championship. I haven't even looked at the leaderboard today, Dan, so this will all be news to me as well.
Well, you know, it was a good scoring day, Mark. It's, I think we still have players on the course, and I think there's 62 players at one under or better. A three-way tie for the lead and a St. Louis connection on that. But at the outset, Lucas Glover played brilliantly this morning. He had 9 birdies in his round, shot 6 under 66, and he was the leader for a long time. But the afternoon wave has been a little more dangerous. And J.J. Spahn is in also at 6 under par. And the third name on that leaderboard is Camilo Villegas. And I don't know if you remember this, Mark, but Camilo Villegas won the BMW Championship in 2008 at the Reef Country Club. That's a long time between 2008 and the 2025 Championship. He's 43 years of age. He's from Columbia. He's had a nice career, and it's nice to see something good. He used to be known as the Spider-Man.
That's right. I was just going to ask you, because he would always kind of get down. When I was watching the TGL event a few weeks ago, someone got down, and they kind of paid homage. I think it was Tom Kim to Camilo doing the Spider-Man thing. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was sort of his trademark. He would get down on all fours to read his putts. But as I said, it was really a good day in terms of the entertainment value at the golf course because you had so many good scores. You know, he's not near the top, but Jordan Spieth played the front nine and holed out twice on the par fives for eagles. Minwoo Lee is in at 5 under par. He shot 531 on the front nine. And then you look at some of the marquee names. Rory McIlroy just finished with a birdie. He's 5 under, 1 off the lead. Scottie Scheffler played very solid golf. He's 3 under for the championship. So a lot of good play going on. And a certain amount of volatility. There are a couple of players that came in with rounds of 79 and 80. Oh. Victor Hovland, remember that name?
Yeah.
We thought he was the next great player. I believe Victor shot 80 today.
He did.
In the player.
Yes, he was. Oh my goodness, he was +8. Max Homa way down with big numbers as well. So that's interesting. Is this such a? Oh, Justin Thomas didn't do so well. Dan, you're talking about him. He was +6. Is this one of those tournaments though? If the leader is sitting there right now at TPC Sawgrass and the Players Stadium course, if they're -6, is this going to grow to like -18 for the championship, or do they toughen this course up and then you know you're sitting at -12 or -13 for the final on Sunday? What's your guess there?
If we don't get any weather and they had mild winds and high skies, the course will continue to dry, which made the whole locations so critically important. No, I don't think we're looking at 18 to 20 under par winning this championship. I'm not looking at any of the three leaders necessarily to win this championship. But I think we could look at something like 12 to 15 might be a reasonable number. And it will, like I said, come down to the hole locations as much as anything else. By the way, I will say that I missed the boat on Justin Thomas, but Daniel Berger is 200 par for this championship. I said you get long odds on him. And even though he's 2 over for the championship, Hideki Matsuyama was 5 over through his first 6 holes, and he fought his way back to 2 over. And at 2 over, 8 back of Glover, he's not out of this championship either.
So this is really the last big tournament before the Masters. I mean, you have a couple of tournaments between now and then, but I guess these players will still play in some of these, but this is really the last big one before April 10th and 13th, right?
Absolutely. And we've got the situation now with the signature events, which have the big money. There's no signature event. I don't think we have a signature event until after the Masters. I think Hilton Head is the next one on the schedule. So you'll see players skipping. In fact, Rory McIlroy, who typically doesn't do this, said he's going in the week before to play his to practice a little bit at Augusta. He has normally not done that. So yeah, this is a significant championship. And as I said yesterday, you know, it's now back in March, and they've got what they want on the tour right now. They've got a significant event in March, April, May, June, July, and August. I mean, it's exactly what they intended to do. And this year, you throw in a Ryder Cup in September, and they've got exactly what they want. And, you know, I don't know what attention they'll get, but the LIV tournament is playing in Asia at the same time. I would think that's unfortunate scheduling. I wouldn't want to go head-to-head with the Players' Championship and try to draw eyeballs.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because what I was going to just say is that I miss Jon Rahm. I miss some of these guys. And I told you this yesterday, I have no interest in LIV. So I wish it would be solved some way where we can see some of these stars that we enjoyed watching. But I guess that's not in the cards right now.
I don't know if you saw the report last week. And, you know, Fred Couples sort of backed it up. That Brooks Koepka has let it be known that if the tours find some kind of resolution of that, his intention is to no longer play in any of the LIV events. He wants to play on the PGA Tour because that's where the people he lives close to, that's the people he practices with, and that's where he wants to play his golf. So, you know, I don't know what that conclusion is going to be. I think it's still a long way off, quite honestly. But the tilt to the PGA Tour is very positive right now.
All right, Dan, thanks for the update on the Players. We'll get a quick hit tomorrow afternoon at the Fish Fry as well, so I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark. Enjoyed it.
Speaking of the Fish Fry, we'd love to see you in Cottleville, Knights of Columbia's tomorrow. We get started at 3 o'clock. The roundtable will include Jane. Lied about something. I'll just say it. I lied. It was fake news. I thought Governor Kehoe had signed the bill to, you know, give control to the police commission again. It passed. It's on his desk. He's going to sign it after spring break. He held a news conference today. That's why I was a little confused.
Yeah.
And Tish reacted to that, and she called it offensive, blah, blah, blah. But we'll talk about all that on the roundtable. Jane Duker, former State Senator Jeff Smith, current State Senator Nick Schroer. We'll have Paul Hall on entertainment. Cusimano's going to, you know, visit with us on sports. We got NCAA tournament action that's going on next week. But right now, I just went on to ESPN. There was a big upset in the SEC tournament. Texas beat A&M. A&M's ranked 14th.
Oh, man.
So that was 94-89 in double overtime. Mizzou plays tonight against Mississippi State. Hopefully they make it to round two tomorrow. Lots of basketball. Frank will weigh in on that. And then we have my friend Chris Smith. Chris's story is amazing. He'll be live in person at the Fish Fry. He's an inspirational story. I've heard from a lot of listeners. He was shot in the head. He survived that. His road to recovery has been very impressive. 48 Hours did a story on him in the fall, and he's got a book coming out as well. So we'll feature Chris tomorrow. And then there's somebody that I'm forgetting. Steve Ellman. Hopefully he's not listening.
Yeah.
Steve Ellman, the St. Charles County executive, is going to visit with us tomorrow as well. So we got a lot coming up, but we got to do this first.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
I'm going to do two parts here because we're on the cusp, and we're going to talk about this during the roundtable, this supposed government shutdown. John Fetterman says he's going to vote for the CR.
I'm going to vote yes for that. And my concern is it's a choice. It's like withholding your vote, vote no, and shut down the government if we don't have the votes for closure. You are voting to shut the government down, and that will absolutely punish millions of Americans. I've described it. It's like, you know, burning down the village to save it.
Yeah, he might be the only Democrat, though, that votes for it, and I'm not sure how this is going to wrap up and who's going to get the blame, but we'll know a little bit more 24 hours from now, or maybe we'll say 1 hour from
now.
Okay. I'm
doing
the math. 3 o'clock tomorrow. It wasn't easy, was it?
Yeah.
I had to pause there for a minute. Have a great night. Hang on. I got breaking news here, Sue. Before we even wrap the show, Ethan just handed this to me. Chuck Schumer has caved, announcing he will back the CR that was passed by the House. So we had some changes even before the end of the show. That is fascinating. There you go. Breaking news.
Get more at 971talk.com.